So I think that oftentimes companies underestimate their customers. They underestimate how willing their customers are to sacrifice features in return for getting something that's actually usable. Well, of course, the hard thing is to kind of communicate this, because everybody's saying they're simple, even when they're very much not. So in some ways, this is just a slow, steady build. But that's pretty much how all business building is. Very, very few businesses out there go from zero to multi-million in a short order. Pretty much all businesses out there are grown slowly but surely. And I think that that's what we've done as well. Basecamp wasn't this blasting success on the second week of operation. It actually took a full year for Basecamp to be able to pay all the bills of 37 cents. Today, of course, it's a fantastic business. It's a multi-million dollar business. We've been doubling our revenues for the past many years, and it's doing very well. But it kind of builds into that. And the reason it builds into that is that this simplicity really works best as a word-of-mouth thing. You have somebody using Basecamp or another product of ours that it's simple and they can actually get something done and they'll tell their friends and so on and so forth. The checklist-driven or the featureless-driven approach is much more a shove-it-down-their-throats approach, because people will perhaps get initially impressed by this long list of features, but when they actually start using it, they probably won't like it that much. Thus, their word of mouth will not be very good. Thus, you need to keep shoving it down new people's throats who haven't heard about your product from somebody else. That's, it, in my mind, generally not a very viable long-term strategy. It's very expensive, and it's just not very satisfying. So in my mind, I think companies in general, they're underestimating their customers. They're underestimating the importance and the success that Simple has had in the marketplace and could have for them, and they're kind of expecting that there'll be a success overnight, which is not going to happen in any case.
Functional specs, you know, they're everywhere. So I think a lot of people think of a functional spec as something that keeps a piece of software organized during the development phase. You just don't agree with that notion?
Oh, I think a functional spec is one of the worst inflictions that has ever happened to the software development world. I think functional specs are a relic of a time when building features was a very, very hard and long process, and you had to do all of this upfront planning, because once you wrote anything in software, it was pretty much impossible to change it. I don't think that functional spec no longer, or is a technique that's any longer relevant. To me, functional spec is a dead document. It's a evolution of agreement. It's very, very easy for people to sit around a table and just try to hash out what the program should do on a piece of paper. As we were talking about before, the cost of adding another feature when you're working with a functional spec is the price of a bullet point in Word, which means incredibly inexpensive. It's also a point where you really don't want that much contention. It's hard to make decisions, because when it's so easy to add something else in, why wouldn't you just do that? Would you really want that big debate at the table right now, or are you just trying to please everybody who sits around the table? Usually you try to please everybody who sits around the table, and that's, again, a really bad way of building good software, because you can't please all the people all the time. You're going to end up with something that pleases nobody at any time. And I think this illusion of agreement is especially dangerous in the sense that we can both agree on what a paragraph of text says. Customers and developers do this all the time. Yes, the system will have a milestone section, and everybody nods their heads and agrees. Developers goes off and builds that milestone section, take it back to the customer, and customer says, this is not at all what I wanted. Because this illusion of agreement, when you're working with abstracts such as paragraphs and words and bullet points, are just so far removed from software that it's almost useless, if not outright dangerous. So I think functional specs are a really bad way of developing software, because they have all these ills, the illusions of agreement. They try to plan a piece of software into, in most unique detail at the point in time where you know absolutely the least about what that piece of software should do. On day one, when you're planning a piece of software, you have no idea how it's all going to fit together. Nobody can hold a complete piece of software in their head and imagine something good. If you instead just plan it piece by piece, work iteratively, work in small chunks, try to finish something, you get the benefit of doing planning for stuff that's very immediate. You're planning for next week or 2 weeks from now. It's so much harder to try to plan what you're going to do 6 months from now, to the point where it sounds like useless in my mind. People and programmers and designers are just not good enough to do that. The only way you can do a successful job, in my mind, the only way you can create useful, good features that people will actually appreciate is by designing them in very unique detail as you're going along, as they're needed right now. So these things kind of have to go hand in hand, and I see the functional spec is just a really poor way of doing it. There's going to be a lot more trust build up between developers and the customer, and developers are going to be a lot happier for it too, because they get to deliver real workable software very early in the process, and they get to get real valuable feedback such that they can change their course before they've implemented everything wrong. So the techniques are use time box approach, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever you decide on, just schedule for that time box, one time box at a time, and you can also just set a budget. So the most this project can cost me is $50,000. Well, divide that by the number of hours you can buy at a given rate from a developer, and you'll end up, okay, we have six boxes of 3 weeks each, so I have to arrive at some usable software within the scope of six times 3 weeks. Well, that's pretty cool, because you can now see after you've spent one of these time boxes, am I getting the right way? Am I liking where this is going? Do I need to change the course? And you can constantly alter and adjust where the project is going. And if you're happy after 4 weeks, if you like the software that you have then, fine, you just stop. If after 6 weeks, you realize that the original budget is spent, but this software is so valuable, you're getting so much good stuff out of it, that it's going to be worth another $50,000. You just keep on going. It's just, to my mind, it's a lot safer way of developing software. It's a lot more likely you'll end up with software that you'll actually want to use and is developing some value. But I understand that it's scary, because it's not how most people do things. And they kind of have a tendency to want to know exactly up front what something is going to cost. That's completely natural. The only problem is it just doesn't work. There's no way that you can ever pinpoint exactly what something is going to cost when you don't know what that something is. And that's how you get into the whole functional spec thing, where you get into the illusion of trying to figure out what the something is actually going to be, but it just doesn't work. Well, I was really having a hard time writing beautiful software in Java and PHP, because those languages and platforms just wasn't, let's say, making themselves readily available for beautiful implementations, at least in the way I use them. So when I finally discovered Ruby, I discovered a programming language that allowed me to write these beautiful programs. And I realized that that was the number one thing that would shoot up my productivity. Being motivated by beautiful software, by writing software that you like, just makes you so much more productive as a programmer. And I think it's up until Ruby on Rails really made that a theme, it had been somewhat neglected that programming environments should really cater to the programmer, not the other way around. Programmers should try to bend themselves in those ways to programs. And I think that most other programming environments are just not optimized for the programmer first. Ruby had it straight in its almost mission statement. Matt, the creator from Japan, when he wrote about why he created Ruby, he wrote that he wanted a programming language to make the programmer happy. And that was his prime motivating goal. Well, I took exactly the same let's say, mission and applied it to just slightly more specific field, that of web programming, and I tried to build a framework that would make programmers really happy about the actual code, the actual work that they're performing. And for all the feedback I get when I go to conferences, when people write me emails and so on, that's the one I'm most proud about. People coming up to me saying, I used to not like my job very much. I used to consider whether programming was something I wanted to do because I wasn't writing programs that were making me happy. I wasn't writing implementations that were beautiful and satisfying. And now I am. I'm loving it now. I'm loving writing beautiful programs. I'm loving being a programmer and so forth, because that's exactly the experience I had. I didn't used to like programming that much. I used to like programs. I used to like having the results of what I did come to life, but I didn't used to like the actual process that much. After I switched to Ruby, started working on Rails, I've never enjoyed programming so much in my life, thus never been so productive doing programming as I've been since I switched. Actually, this is one of the bits I always play of when I came here from Denmark about 3 years ago. One of the things I absolutely hated was the notion of the construction kit meal, which is this notion that in certain bars, you'd get a burger and it comes disassembled. There'd be a certain amount of lettuce, there'd be some tomatoes, some onions, and so on. It was up to you to put it back together. Well, screw that. I just want a meal. I want what the chef thinks is going to be a good meal. And I really don't want to put it all back together myself. That's, I believe, why I'm paying this guy to prepare food for me. And in the same sense, this is why users are paying software developers money to use the product, because the software developer hopefully put some thought into how stuff should work. So we're really not big into having a whole lot of options. Actually, one of our prime motivating design directives is to avoid preferences. Whenever we have to put in or feel that we have to put in a preference in our software, we pretty much consider that a defeat. We were not good enough. We were not good enough at coming up with a reasonable choice that most people would like most of the time. And I take the same approach to designing Ruby and Rails. I really don't want there to be a whole lot of choice when the choice itself doesn't matter, or when we think that there is the best practice that we could just follow out the gate. Why do we have to leave all these choices up to the user or the end programmer if we could just once and for all make a good choice for everybody? I think it's just such a waste of world productivity when you force everybody to go over the same considerations time and time again to make essentially the same choices.